The voice of the Lord said to Elijah, "Go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by." Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. I don't do silence very well. Being quiet is one of the hardest things in the world for me to do. My wife read my sermon last night, and she laughed uproariously. To sit still, not just in silence, but to literally quiet myself, to stop from moving, to calm my thoughts, or more accurately, allow the Spirit to calm them, to just be in silence. I suspect I'm not alone in having this difficulty. Certainly in my life, my entire life, I've heard innumerable sermons from pulpits about how our society and our culture just is constantly bombarding us, constantly wanting to keep us moving and engaged from one TV show or movie to the next, from one trendy new shop and style to another. And all of that was well before we had cable television and 24 news stations, the internet, and our ubiquitous handheld devices that I'm quite fond of, frankly. To be quiet, to be still. Today, we are so aware of how much we need this that we seek to counter it by talking about mindfulness and meditation. Some of you know I'm dean of the Honors College, the Lewis Honors College at the University of Kentucky, and we have created within the college a Center for Personal Development, and one of the key elements they do is to teach our students and our faculty and staff mindfulness. But we present it as if it's some sort of new product from a pharmaceutical company. But it's not. It's an ancient need and an ancient practice. These are not new disciplines or techniques, but they are so incredibly important for our health. We all need to learn to be more quiet, more still, to get away from the rush and rhythm of the world and regroup. Jesus did this often. The number of times in the Gospels that he went out into the wilderness are numerous. In those days, of course, it didn't take very long to get out in the wilderness from where he was. But still, it was something that even Jesus needed to do. How much more do we need to? In our human arrogance, I think we tend to always think that now is the most advanced and sophisticated society and with all of its pressures. And so we look romantically back to times past and think how much simpler and more wholesome it was then. I think about some anecdotes that our interim priest Corky shared when he was a youth. Certainly there were different times, but the pressures, the anxieties, they've always been with us. As long as we have families, we have somebody else telling us what to do, or at least providing expectations. First century Judea, that was 2,000 years ago for those keeping score, it was no different. Life was hectic enough that Jesus needed to get away. Jesus would go out into the wilderness to get away from it all. So we as society, this is something we've always needed, these pressures of expectations, the need to work in order to be able to provide our basic needs like bread and broadband, and just the general noise of life. Oh, the noise. We need to step away from it from time to time. And I'm just really not good at it. Sometimes I try and tell myself it's how I'm wired. It's just who I am. I just got to be who I'm going to be. And what happens then, because I'm lying to myself, is that at some point, because I'm lying to myself and I'm hurting myself, at some point, it will be thrust upon me. The time of quiet and silence will occur, whether I intend for it to do so or not. And that silence can make us afraid. But in the silence, we find God. In our readings in the Old Testament and the Gospel, we find two very different men who are both out in the wilderness for very different reasons, neither because they want to be there, but because they had no choice. In the case of Elijah, he had been doing the work of the Lord, and the result was Queen Jezebel wanted to kill him. Now, granted, if you don't know the story, the chapter that precedes chapter 19, the work of the Lord involved a significant sacrificial showdown like you have never seen before, and the death of 450 prophets of Baal. So a little explanation, and really, I got to tell you, I wanted just to preach on Old Testament stuff. I mean, it's my academic thing, and this is one of my favorite passages, but anyway. Ahab, not the Melville character, King Ahab. He was king of Judah of Israel in the 9th century. So that's 3,000 years ago, if you're keeping track. And his wife, Jezebel, they had turned Israel to the worship of Baal and Asherah and killed all the other prophets of the Lord God but Elijah. And so a drought had descended on the land. But now at this point, God said to Elijah, you got to go back to Ahab and Jezebel. And it's time that we deal with this head on. Call all those prophets of Baal out. Let them set up their altar. Let them call down fire from Baal to consume their ox, and then set up an altar for me. And on that altar, put water, lots of water, water that's precious because you're in a drought. And then a pillar of fire comes down, and everyone could see that the Lord was God. And the prophets of Baal came out. Well, they didn't come out, actually. That was the end of them. Tough passage in many ways, but the point was that Elijah was doing what God wanted. He was being faithful to God. And the result was Jezebel wanted him dead. Nobody liked him for doing what God had told him to do. And so he ran out into the wilderness. He initially just lay down and said, it's enough now, Lord. Take away my life. I am done. I can understand it. I was sharing at the coffee hour, we were talking about my grandmother, who's 100 and a half. And those of you who know me know that I share openly about my family and that our son Mac died 6.5 years ago when he was just a couple weeks shy of his 9th birthday. My grandmother was 94 at the time, as you might have counted, doing math. A lot of math in this sermon. But my wife, not long after, turned to my grandmother and says, Grandma, do you ever wonder why you're still alive? I was kind of shocked. My grandmother's a pretty strong individual. I was waiting for the response, and she said, all the time. We all have moments when we are just, I'm ready to let it go. Food was provided. Water was provided. Get up and go. 40 days, 40 nights, he goes out, and he goes up Mount Horeb. And there, on Mount Horeb, he hears God in the middle of the night. He's asleep in the cave after all of this. The word of the Lord came to him saying, what are you doing here, Elijah? Now, this is before all the earthquake and fire and all that sort of stuff. God says to him, what are you doing here? Now, God knows. God's not asking Elijah for his own edification. God knows why Elijah is here. God knows that he had served him well and his reward had been to be chased out of the country, to be chased even to his death. God knows why Elijah's there, but does Elijah know why he's there? In therapy or in business planning, we call this, among other things, stock-taking or restating the mission. Sometimes, we do this in churches as well, sometimes you can get so focused on the day-to-day, we'll get the service right, we got the running event, we got the this, and we got the that, we got the other thing. You got to come back and say, what's our mission? What are we about? For us as individuals, to pause and say, ask of ourselves, what am I doing here? What is my purpose? Why am I here? And Elijah responds, I'm here because I did your will. I did what you told me to do, and now they want to kill me. You will see the Lord. Go to the mouth of the cave and wait. And there it is. There's thunder, there's lightning. At Pentecost, I spoke about how God appeared in fire and smoke and thunder and lightning, and yet here, God is most present and speaks most clearly in the silence. Elijah hears God ask that same question, why are you here? And he says again, the exact same words, Lord, I did your will. I have been zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, and they are seeking my life to take it away. Elijah has then gone out into the wilderness. He's taken this time, and he restates his priority, and he restates his commitment to God and God's commitment to his people, his covenant and his love. But what he received in return, Elijah received nothing but death threats. But here, standing before God, saying, I'm done. I'm ready to let it go. God's response, go, return on your way, and continue your ministry. Continue your work of being my spokesman and my prophet. God didn't let Elijah off the hook, but he gave him that space. He gave him that time, and he met Elijah there. In the gospel, we find this fella of Gerasene, this man. He's been possessed by demons. He's been chained and locked up and was living in the tombs so that he wouldn't hurt himself or anybody else. Even then, his possession would be so strong that he would break his chains and run out into the wilderness, away from the city, away from the world. Again, he's someone who didn't want to be out there, but was driven. But rather than climbing a holy mountain, Jesus came to him. Jesus came to this man, and the demons who possessed and controlled and tormented him recognized that here in front of him was the Son of the Most High God. And Jesus showed mercy both to the man and the demons and released the man from his torment. And then he sits down with him and he teaches him. This is a little dramatic. Swine herds jumping off cliffs do tend to focus the attention, especially of the swine herders who just lost a significant amount of money. So the people of the region come out. They want to see what's going on. There's the man who's a freak, and now there's this other man who's clearly a freak because he made the pigs jump. So they come out, and when they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind. And they were afraid. They saw a completely normal scene. And they were afraid. They came out to see a freak show. They came out because they were angry. Jesus had deprived the swineherders of their profit. They came to see a fight. They came to see a spectacle. And what they saw was a spectacularly normal scene. And they were so afraid. They told Jesus, leave now, please. You're freaking us out. This ain't right. Go away. There in the quietness, they all met Jesus. And that man who had been possessed was freed. That man was given life. And the people from around They couldn't handle it. They couldn't handle this life-giving transformation. It scared them. So Elijah and this man from Gerizim, when they were afraid, they went out into the wilderness and they found God. They went into those quiet places. They went into that silence, the silence among the mountains, among the tombs. And God met them there. God spoke to them. God gave them strength. And then God sent them out again. They weren't allowed to remain there. We don't stay in the silent places. We need to be there, but we don't stay there. And then this man from whom the demons had gone begged Jesus that he might go with him. But Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." So the man went away, proclaiming throughout the city how much God had done for him. We go into the silent places. We must. We must go out into the wilderness from time to time, whether that's internal or external. I love the fact I live just down Leestown Road. I can take a left out of my little development, and within about 3 miles, it's just a country lane. It's beautiful. Get out, away, be quiet, reflect. Why am I here? Who am I serving? What is my purpose? Listen for God. We may go out with all sorts of anxiety, stress, fear, grief, but there we will be met by God. Grace is waiting for us in the stillness of the wilderness. In His grace, Jesus will give us new life, new strength, and He will feed us with the spiritual food that will nourish and give us strength for the journey ahead. And then God will send us out again to declare how much God has done for us. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Amen.